First, Steve Paulson talks with Kerry Sudler, a man who discovered his family once owned slaves. He took a tape recorder back to his hometown in Maryland and found much more than he bargained for.
Watch your step.
Where were the slaves kept around here?
Most of them in the basement. They had slave quarters. We don't have any actual shackles or anything down here. You gotta realize that this was all dirt floors. I busted through here. This is the width of the thing. And we concreted all this. See if I can find a light to turn on. Stand right still. There we go. And of course, you see the age. See how the porous the bricks are? When it rains, the water just comes in. They had coal, they were using coal down here. See where they have, we covered that up?
Oh, yeah.
That little brick section there.
Mm-hmm.
And we put this furnace in and bricked all that back in there. Of course, it's expensive heating 16 rooms.
That is your cousin, Foster Sudler Willis, giving you a tour of Sledmore, one of two plantations your family owned in Sudlersville on the east coast of Maryland. When did you first find out your family owned slaves?
When I was growing up, my father would talk about it now and then with sort of a sense of pride, and I didn't think that much of it because, you know, didn't everybody own slaves? I mean, you sort of assume it. It's kind of like if you eat a certain kind of food all the time, you assume everybody else does. You know, we had this grandfather clock that was built in the early 1700s and all this sort of legacy, and I just didn't pay much attention. And when he died, I inherited a family Bible that was written in this quill ink, or passages, pages and pages of it, in the mid-1700s. And in it, it listed humans and what they had sold for in shillings and pounds and early dollars. And it was just so clinical. It was shocking to me because this is not the experience of everybody else. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really kind of troubling to me. And I didn't really understand it. And also, honestly, I didn't really believe it. I mean, can this be true?
Well, and in fact, I'd like to read a few entries from the Sudler family record because I think it really puts it in black and white, just what we're talking about here. Let me just read a few entries, and I'm quoting here. Memorandum, December 1801, bought two Negro boys, 210 pounds, of Mr. George Tull, Vic's Jock and Jack, and the said Tull sold one Negro woman named Sarah to Michael Murray for $100. Judah had a little one in the cornfield while gathering peas, Wednesday, September 25th, 1811, boy child named Pedum. Arnold ran away on Whit Sunday, May 21st, 1825, and was taken up in the Delaware State on Monday the 23rd by Mr. Peter Stewart. Tubman Sudler went up after Arnold on Thursday the 26th. It really makes it very real, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And you wonder what your part is in this. I mean, of course I wasn't alive then. Most of my white friends or white associates will say, hey, it wasn't you, you weren't there. But something occurred to me a few years ago, which is really simple, that if I choose to carry my family's name, and there might be some good stuff attached to that, you know, I have to really carry its full legacy. You can't just be all the good stuff and then deselect all the icky part and just show the world the highlight reel. Because much of the social access, if you will, that I have is clearly earned on the backs of other people and on their arms and legs.
You did something pretty unusual. After you discovered this family history, you went out with a tape recorder and talked to a lot of relatives, some on the black side, some on the white side, and we have a bit of tape from a white Sudlerville relative, 80-year-old William Sudler Goodhand, showing that racism is not just a thing of the past.
Colored people, to me, in my lifetime here, were never any kind of a hindrance or any kind of anything. They were just what was here. That was part of the way life was. So nobody, there was never, I didn't know of any animosity when I was a young fella. I didn't know of any. And we, as you pick and choose your friends, we pick and choose ours, and they pick and choose theirs, and everybody got along pretty well. And like the colored man today, that as he gets his education and as he acts more like he should act, like a human being should act, he is accepted more and more. And the only thing that keeps him from not being completely accepted is they are different.
That's really something.
Yeah, it is. Steve, to have been standing on a plantation that once was a slave plantation and is now surrounded by soybeans and corn and this and that, and to have a guy 9 generations later, still family, sipping on iced tea or a mint julep, whatever it was, and tell you about colored people. What was odd to me is after 80 years, I thought, well, how many have you met with the last name and what are they like? And of course, not a finger had ever been lifted to go meet them.
Well, you did something quite unusual. You chased down a lot of relatives, descendants of your family's slaves who actually have the same name as you, Carrie Sudler. Let's hear another bit of tape.
I have to say I was a little nervous to call because part of the reason I'm calling is that the reason that you and I probably have the same last name is not through the best circumstances in history.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, this may sound a little weird, but I just want to apologize for any difficulty that life is as far as racism and all the rest of it. And I want to let you know that you have somebody with the same last name who's interested in having a level playing field for everybody, and that I don't suppose the white side of the family ever apologized to the black side. I really don't know if they ever did or didn't, but I just want to let you know that it does not continue even in silence.
Yeah, I certainly appreciate that and certainly welcome that. So that's a good feeling that goes with that. Let me assure you there are no issues with me along those lines, trying to understand all the things that happened. I guess it's more important to me just to try to understand, you know, what went on.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm thrilled just the fact that you called.
So you deliberately set out to apologize to some of the black descendants of your family slaves.
Yeah, I couldn't find any record, and I don't know of any instance where my family has ever officially or formally or informally apologized to any of these people. And there are hundreds of them and hundreds of them out there, descendants. And I think it has to happen. I think it's important that they know that they're important people, as important as I am or you are or anything else, and that if I don't do anything about this, it just continues, and a larger invisible oppression continues, and I'm a participant of it.
How did you feel doing this, making these kinds of apologies?
I was scared. I have to admit that. I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I didn't know if they were going to yell, you know, swear at me or hit me or I don't know. It was really a major, you know, felt really risky to do it. But I had to do it. I had to do it. And whatever was going to happen would have been worth it. And it has been worth it.
We have another bit of tape. And I think this is a response of a black settler you met in a store near your old family plantation.
Your white skin gives you access to almost anything that you want. I'm followed in grocery stores, and I'm followed in department stores still. Is it better? Yeah, it's better in my own lifetime. It's better. But it's not perfect. It hasn't improved. And white people still say, yeah, I have black friends, and they say that I'm not racist. But if you have to make that statement, then there must be some racism somewhere. I certainly am racist still. I still have to work past all of that stuff because there's jealousy, envy, and sometimes hate. When I look at the things that other people have access to that I don't have.
What did you say to that person?
I was talking about access, and I had been in the White House earlier that day because I talked my way into it, which I know how to do. And I really didn't know what to do, so I small-talked the guy up in the beginning and just asked him, you know, what's it like to walk around in the town with this name? It's your last name, but you're not the white guy, so maybe you don't feel the same. And he really did turn and just put it to me really brutally like that. And what a wake-up call, because it never occurred to me that if he and I were shopping in the same place, that the security guys are going to be following him around just because he's black. And maybe I'm the one stealing. But he's the one that they follow just because of his skin color. You know, one of the other conversations we had is that ever since he was born, he was taught that he was lazy and stupid and ugly. I mean, imagine growing up your whole life thinking you're lazy, stupid, and ugly, and all of your people are too. So you never really kind of climb out of that because you're told it's hopeless and don't even bother. And here I was raised not to think that I was stupid or lazy or ugly, but that I can do whatever I want and be the next president, that kind of thing. He was never told that. So I was handed a whole different kind of access, two people with the same name, except one is black and one is white. And here he is just trying to buy a shirt, and they're tracking him down like a dog. It's just really wrong, you know?
What did you say to him? Did you tell him you're sorry?
I did. I said, you know, I would like to apologize for the way that your life is right now and any participation that my family may have had in it in the last several hundred years in creating a world that is the way it is for you right now, that you were brought here against your will, your family, your great-great-great-great-grandfather 9 generations ago, maybe in chains, you know, maybe whatever went on that was really painful that has created a reality for him today that is so much more difficult than my reality, and needlessly so. I really don't know what you say to somebody. I mean, I wasn't given the manual or the lessons on how to do this, and I've gone it alone. And a lot of white people really resent me and think that I have no business doing this. I wasn't there. It wasn't my fault. But I carry my family's name, and I carry what it's done, both good and bad. What do you do in life? You just try and do the next right thing, even if you don't understand it.
You know, there is another response that some people might have to all this, a more cynical response that really what you're doing as a white American is you're just trying to appease your guilty conscience by apologizing.
I wouldn't deny it. I wouldn't deny it. I do have a guilty conscience. I mean, I grew up around a whole lot of serious bigotry, and I saw people get hurt, and I've seen people get hurt. I do feel bad about that, and I'm sensitive to it. So it is hard work on a daily basis to try and overcome bigotry and fear, because that's really what it is. It's fear. I don't really know how to do it. I sure wasn't taught it in school.
Well, it's obvious how powerful this whole experience has been for you. I mean, how important it has been to apologize. Do you have any sense of whether the black settlers you talk to, the descendants of your family's slaves, whether they get anything out of your apologies?
Well, only what they said was that they were really glad that I had called. I don't think they knew what to say either, because every single one of them had never had this experience and had never expected ever to have this experience, just as I never expected to do it or to ever hear of it, really.
And you have to wonder, is saying sorry enough?
I don't suppose it's enough, but all I can really do, because I don't have piles of money to pay people or do anything, but it's like a living amend, if that makes sense, where my behavior does not contribute to their continued oppression. I mean, that's kind of all I can do. I don't suppose it's enough. I wish I could do more, but at this point in my life, this is kind of all I can do right now.
Kerry Sudler, talking with Steve Paulson. Sudler lives in Los Angeles, and he's still digging into his family's past. Both sides.
I would imagine that there are still some black people that carry the Sudler name around here.
Oh, yeah, there are. I don't know any of them. I really don't, but I know there are some. I know a rather, to me, was is a funny story that Dad, my father, was with three other men, and he was going to a ball game in Baltimore. And he was doing some pretty heavy bragging about the settlers and how they were pretty straight people and one thing and another. And I wasn't paying too much attention to driving. He was driving, and a cop stopped him. Now, I've forgotten what they got stopped for. It didn't make any difference, but they got their ticket. It was a great big colored policeman. And when he signed it, he was his name was Sudler. So there was quite a lot of joking about that, of course. So.